I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man, and I'm here to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Yes, boys and girls, it's Comic Weekly time, and here I come right into your house to bring a little fun and happiness. Right out of the pages of Puck the Comic Weekly, straight into your living room, your friend, the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Little Miss Honey, how are you today?
Oh, I'm just fine, and I know a riddle.
I'm just fine, too. What is it?
Excuse me, I should have asked how you are. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you.
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, that's just fine.
You're welcome.
Now, you say you know a riddle.
Oh, yes. What is the meanest tree in the world?
The meanest tree in the world? Well, now, that's a strange riddle. I don't think I can figure that out. What is the meanest tree in the world?
A crab tree.
Oh, that's very, very good. I know a riddle, too.
Goody, tell me.
Many think it's tasty. It is used the world around. It is not made of earth, but it is always ground.
Oh, that's tricky, and it's longer, too.
Yes.
And that's harder, too.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
It's not made of earth, but it always is ground. I give up.
It's coffee.
Huh? Oh, that's very good. Yeah. Oh, coffee is ground in the coffee grinder.
Yes.
Yes, now please read me the funny.
Puck the Comic Weekly? Very well, I will. And I'll read it in just a moment. But before I do, let's listen to this nice man. Here we go with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the first page, hop along Cassidy.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Six guns blazing as he thunders along. Give us music for hop along. Hoppy is on the trail of the Chameleon, a robber who has changed his disguise every time he commits a new crime. After a fight with him on the stagecoach, Hoppy had jumped off with a strong box full of gold which the stagecoach was carrying. Hoppy had hid the gold before the outlaws could get to him. And then Hoppy went in search of the Chameleon, trailing him into the desert. But what Hoppy doesn't know is that the outlaws have worked out a scheme, hoping to trick Hoppy. Hoppy has followed the trail of the Chameleon's horse, which leads him to a waterhole in the desert. Hoppy sees the horse, dismounts, and goes to the waterhole, saying, "Ah, the Chameleon's horse. Well, he must be around here somewhere." But Hoppy finds the horses alone. The Chameleon is not around. When Hoppy turns around, last picture top row, he sees his horse, Topper, has disappeared. Quickly, he goes back where Topper was. But he's nowhere in sight. And then he looks back at the waterhole and sees the other horse has disappeared. First picture bottom row, he exclaims, "I've been tricked. Now the Chameleon's mount is gone. Hey, what's that? Hoofbeats." He runs around a little hummock at the edge of the waterhole and sees prints of several horses going away, and in the distance, a cloud of dust. Standing there alone in the desert under the hot sun, he says, "Stranded. I can't stay here. My only chance is to follow that trail of fresh prints." Mile after mile, Hoppy trudges through the vast desert wasteland, his throat parched from the searing heat. Suddenly, he spots an object lying in the sand. A water canteen. He picks up the canteen and starts to drink. And then exclaims, first picture, next row, "Salted. They're trying to torture me." Worn out, exhausted, dizzy from the hot sun, he collapses. A short time later, horsemen appear over a rise. It's the Chameleon and his men coming toward Topper. They stop beside Hoppy, last picture. The Chameleon looks at Hoppy lying on the ground and says,
"Well, the sun's done its job. Get him out of here. By the time he recovers, he'll be delirious enough to babble where he's hidden that strong box."
Oh, those cruel men to have tricked Hoppy that way. That's cruel, leaving that canteen of salted water when he was so thirsty.
Yes, but men like that will do anything.
They hope that he may talk when he's sick and tell where the strong box is. Do you think he will?
No, I don't think he will.
But maybe they'll torture him. Do you think they will?
Well, I certainly hope not, but we'll find that out next week. Now?
Well, now let's turn our over to page 3 and see if Prince Valiant is there.
You guessed right. Here he is, Prince Valiant.
And I'm anxious to read that because Val and his friend Arf had gone hunting in the wilderness.
And they'd got caught in a storm and their horses were killed. And Val and Arf had to find food and make themselves shelter and build themselves a canoe out of the things in the forest.
Just like the Girl Scouts do.
Yes.
And now they've started for home, but the river is dangerous and wild in places. I'm anxious to see if they got home safe.
Well, let's read now and find out. Here we go with Prince Valiant and the days of King Arthur. Eckett, Breckett, Grey Malkin, and Quince. Music romantic for a fair, fair prince. Val and Arf head for home through the forest, down long, smooth stretches, around curves, and at times they speed along through rough and roaring rapids. And at times they have to carry their canoe around the waterfalls, as we see them, first picture, second row. And, of course, they stop to get food. They live on fish from the river, and for dessert, they stop to pick berries. And once, last picture, second row, they come face to face with an angry mother bear with her two cubs in a blueberry patch. For a moment, the bears are silent. And then they go away, and Val and Arf are safe. And then, first picture, bottom row, late one day, the river carries them into a narrow canyon. Too late, they hear the ominous roar of tumbling waters, and in a second, they are swept around a curve into wilder, rough waters. No canoe could stay afloat in such a maelstrom, but Val and Arf cling desperately to theirs, for the bladders at each end keep it from sinking. And finally, last picture, they drag themselves ashore. Night has fallen. They build themselves a fire, and in the morning, they will be able to tell whether or not their frail boat is damaged beyond repair.
Oh, isn't that terrible? After all the trouble to build that canoe, it got smashed on the rocks again.
Yes, that was certainly tough luck, but maybe it didn't get smashed entirely. Maybe it only needs to be patched up.
I hope so. But even so, I feel sorry because they worked so hard and so long to build that canoe. It was so dangerous traveling on the river in those days.
Yes, maybe next week things will be a little easier for them.
My, I hope so.
Now let's turn over the page and go past Jungle Jim. Turn over another page. Go past the Lone Ranger. And look there on page 7.
Oh, Donald Duck, my favorite.
Don't say it. I'll read it right away. Say the magic words with me. Squeegem, squeegem, squiddy chicka-chack. Let's have music to fit a quack-quack. Today, Donald comes home leading a new, huge dog. He's a bloodhound. And he says to his nephew, Huey,
meet my new dog, Sniffy, champion cracker.
He doesn't look very bright to me.
You want to bet he can't crack you down?
Yes.
All right. I'll give you a 10-minute start. And don't try the old walking in water trick.
Why?
Because we'll simply cover both banks till we find where you came out.
My, my, my. Very interesting.
And off Huey runs. Last picture, top row. Out in the country, Huey comes to a creek, and he does exactly what Donald says he shouldn't try. He walks in the water. First picture, bottom row. Donald and his hound have tracked Huey out into the country. The trail, of course, ends at the water. As the dog runs around trying to find Huey's scent again, Donald exclaims,
wow, wow, wow. So we did try the water trick. Well, come on. We'll cover this bank first, Sniffy.
And on that side of the bank, they go, looking for the tracks where they are sure Huey will come out of the water. Meanwhile, way down the bend, Huey has come to a bridge in the middle of the stream. He catches onto the props, pulls himself up, and shinnies up the pole. Pulls himself on top of the bridge just as a truck approaches. Huey waves to the truck, and it stops. The man in the truck says,
hop right in, son. I'm on my way to town.
Well, thanks, mister.
And the truck drives off. Hours later, last picture, at home, Huey is sitting in a chair reading the Comic Weekly when the door opens, and in walks Donald, carrying his dog, who's all worn out from trying to find Huey. Huey looks up and says cheerfully,
"Have a nice walk."
Donald looks at Huey and goes, and the dog goes.
Wasn't that funny? The dog didn't find Huey, and he looked for him so long he got dog tired.
Yeah, dog tired. That's very funny. And Huey pulled a smart trick on the dog by climbing out of the water onto the bridge.
Yes, by getting out on the bridge, he didn't put his feet on shore.
And, of course, then the dog couldn't pick up Huey's scent, and he must have had some very crazy time trying to figure out what had happened.
Yes.
Well, now let's turn over the page and see what's there.
All right. Oh, look, Dick's Adventures. And I'm anxious to read that because Dick is in the early days of America on an expedition into the Wild West with Captain Lewis and Captain Clark.
Yes, they were caught in the middle of a storm in the Rocky Mountains, and the water came rushing down the gully where they were. And just when they were about to drown, three Spanish men threw ropes to them and saved their lives.
And then a very strange thing happened. Instead of being friends, as everybody thought, the Spanish captain told Captain Lewis that the Americans could not go in the direction where they were going, and he told them to turn around and go back, or he will fight them.
Yes, after saving their lives, he's willing to fight them to the death if the Americans don't turn back.
Do you think they will?
Well, let's find out right now. Here we go with Dick's Adventures. Say the magic words with me.
Riggity-pack-a-zack-a-zick.
Let's have music for Adventurous Dick. For hundreds of miles through wilderness, Dick has pushed westward with the Lewis and Clark expedition. And now, above Great Falls on the Missouri, a party of men calling themselves Spanish soldiers orders them to turn back. Captain Lewis asks, "Well, why?" The Spanish leader roars,
"The land ahead is Spanish territory. It belongs to the King of Spain."
Captain Lewis roars back,
"It's anybody's territory."
For a moment, it looks as if bullets are about to take the place of words. And then the Spanish captain growls,
Perhaps you Yankees are right. But to have a claim on this territory, you must be the first to enter it. Very well. Let us see who will be the first. And death to the loser."
And so the race and the destiny of two nations begins. Across the Rockies, through canyons and towering passes. Groaning under the weight of supplies and boats, Dick and his companions make the incredible portage across the roof of America from the headwaters of the Missouri to the source of a new river hurling itself westward called the Columbia. Finally, the boats are put in the water. Last picture, second row, down with the current in raging waters alive with leaping salmon, ever closer to the great Pacific they go. But nowhere are their rivals seen until Dick lets out a yell of terror, pointing. On shore, they see the Spaniards' camp, and beside it, Spanish men lying dead, killed by wolves. For their valiant rivals, the race is done. And the wolves slink away, first picture bottom row, leaving an inglorious victory over men who were too starved, too worn with exhaustion to fight them on. The Americans continue down the river. And at last, days later, a great shout goes up. There before them lies the mighty Pacific, and the historic cross-continental trip is finished. The Northwest Territory is claimed for the Americans by Captain Lewis and Clark. Dick wakes up the next morning and tells his dad the dream he had. And his dad says, "Yes, Dick, that was quite a dream you had. The Lewis and Clark expedition was the first key that really opened up the West."
Oh, I'm glad that the Americans got there first, but I feel sorry that those Spanish men were killed by the wolves.
Yes. Well, now look below Dick's Adventures. Rusty Riley.
Oh, I'm anxious to read that.
Very well, I'll read it in just a moment. But first, here's that nice man again with something interesting to say. Now here we go again with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the last page of the first section, Rusty Riley.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Gallop and run till the road is dusty. Give us music for his horse and Rusty. Two Englishmen who have been visiting the Milestone Farm had stolen some valuable trophies from Mr. Miles' safe and have hidden them in an abandoned house. Rusty and his friend Pete trailed the crooks to the house one night and were caught there by the crooks. The crooks have taken Rusty and Pete in Pete's car and are escaping in the car with Rusty and Pete as prisoners. Nobbs, who's dressed as Sir Percival's chauffeur, is saying,
"Hey, Posh, don't forget I ain't had breakfast, not even a cup of java."
Sir Percival replies,
"Okay, Nobby, there's a little town ahead. We'll stop there and get some chow and some gas."
Meanwhile, at the Milestone Farm, Mr. Miles and Tex are talking over the detective's report. The detectives think that Rusty and Pete are the thieves because Rusty's fingerprints were on the coal chisel found under the library window, and also because the boys have disappeared. Miles is saying,
"Tex, if Rusty and young Peter stole those trophies, as the police believe, then Rusty was led by Peters. It was never his idea."
Tex replies,
"Well, now, boys, I ain't ready to believe it of either of 'em. All the cops are going on is Rusty's fingerprints and a coal chisel and a pinch bar."
Mr. Miles goes on, last picture, top row.
"Yes, that's true, Tex, but the fingerprints and the fact that they've run away. It's a pretty strong case."
"Well, boss, there's a couple of things that don't add up. First, I don't think that pinch bar could have opened that wall safe without bending. And second, there should have been a hammer if that coal chisel was used."
First picture, bottom row, Nobbs comes out of the filling station after getting gas. He gets in the car saying,
"Hey, Puss, we got a scram. I just heard a radio announcement in that store. There's a general alert out for these kids and for this car." "Well, okay, Nobby. Take that dirt road to the right. We aren't apt to meet a cop there."
As they round a curve, they see a sign that reads, "Take next left turn for Colossal Caverns." Sir Percival says,
"By Jove, Nobby, there's our answer. Head for the caverns."
They arrive in the caverns. Sir Percival looks around and says cheerfully,
"Well, now, we've made it without being seen. These caverns are closed to the public until spring, so it'll be nice and private for you kids."
Rusty replies,
"Hey, good night. You don't mean you're going to lock us in here, do you?"
They push Rusty and Pete in a room nearby, last picture, and lock them in.
"No, only temporarily, my dear young friends. And when we have collected certain goods from the old house, the police will receive an anonymous call, and you will be released."
Locking the boys in that spooky, dark place. Are they going to leave them there?
That's exactly what they're going to do.
Oh, I hope they get out of this place before Sir Percival comes back.
Yes, he may come back. We'll find that out next week. Now let's pick up the second section.
I already have, and here they are. Dagwood and Blondie.
And here we go with Dagwood and Blondie. Say the magic words with me. Ramapoo, ramapum, zim, zam, zombie. Conjure me music for Dagwood and Blondie. Dagwood is awakened in the middle of the night by a terrific thunderstorm. He sees the lightning through the window and he says, "Well, I hope that thunderstorm doesn't frighten the children." And Blondie says,
"It's awfully loud."
Then, an extra big crash shakes the house. And then another. And last picture top row, the children and the dogs dash into Dagwood's room. Leap into his bed. And they lie there trembling. Dagwood says,
"No, no, no, no. You shouldn't be afraid of thunder. It's just a lot of noise. Noise won't hurt you."
The kids and dogs get out of bed and stand up, looking a little uncertain. Dagwood says,
"Now, don't be brave and go back to bed. Remember, that storm is far off in the sky."
Cookie smiles,
We're not afraid now, Pop.
And Alexander smiles,
Good night, Pop.
And even the dogs smile, and they trot back to their rooms. Dagwood looks at them proudly and says,
"I knew you'd be brave if I explained it to you."
Dagwood looks at them trotting off, and then that old feeling comes on him again. It's his stomach. He begins to growl. And by the time you can say, "Chocolate nut sundae with marshmallow, maraschino cherries, topped with a banana split," Dagwood's in the kitchen.
"I'm wide awake now. I might as well fix myself a sandwich."
So he makes himself a sandwich out of bread, ham, egg, spaghetti, ketchup, bacon, tomatoes, mustard, chicken. Oh, I forgot, butter. And he looks at it proudly and says,
"That's a beautiful sandwich. I'll eat it in the living room so as not to disturb the family anymore."
And he starts for the living room.
A thunder splits the air.
He dashes upstairs.
"Move over, here I come!"
And he leaps into bed. Blondie looks at him in disgust for being so afraid. So Dagwood sits up sheepishly, and he says,
"I had a sandwich. Where did it go?"
And by the time you can say, "I like a ham sandwich with chicken, spaghetti, onions, tomatoes, and mustard on it because..." Dagwood's in the living room, last picture, bottom row. And he's sweeping his sandwich off the rug
And Blondie and the kids look at it scattered around on the furniture, the chairs, and every place. And Blondie exclaims,
"And get that egg off the mantelpiece." Wasn't that silly?
Oh,
as you're telling the children that thunder is nothing to be afraid of, then Dag would get scared worse than they did.
Yes, they only jumped from one room into Dagwood's bed. He jumped from downstairs up to his bed.
He certainly did. He looked like a diver trying to win a medal.
Yes, he certainly did.
Oh, that Dagwood is some character.
Uh-huh, and now look underneath Dagwood and Blondie. Roy Rogers.
Oh, and a terrible thing has happened to Roy. As he and Wildwood O'Dowd went to investigate and try to capture that old man named Cosmo who caused them so much trouble in the lumber camp.
Yes, and when he came to the skidway where the logs had slid from the top of the hill to the river below, Cosmo stepped up behind him and hit him on the head. And Roy started to slide to the water below.
And there was a big log ready to slide down that skidway. And if it goes down the hill, it will crash into Roy and will kill him if he's subconscious. So please read. I want to see if he gets away.
Very well, here we go with Roy Rogers, King of the Cowboys. And say the magic words with me. Hi-yip-hi-yo. Now here we go with Roy and Trigger. Hi-yip-hi-yo. Roy, dazed by the blow Cosmo gave him, slides down the skidway as old Cosmo laughs.
I flung Rogers under the grease skidway. That's one less timberman left to destroy the forest. He'll be crushed by the next log.
At that moment, Wildwood O'Dowd sees the operator of the donkey engine reach for the lever to drop a log into the skidway. She knows he can't see what's happened to Roy. As he jockeys the log around to lower it on the skidway, Wildwood pulls up a rifle, aims at the rope, hoping to cut it in two with a shot so the log will drop to the ground. But she's a second too late. Instead, the log falls onto the skidway. Straddling it, it starts to bump its way down slowly. At that moment, Roy hits the water, last picture top row. As he comes up, first picture bottom row, he exclaims, "Holy catch! A log slipping into the skidway. I'll never get away in time." He realizes his only chance is to dive down to the bottom of the river, which he does, hoping the pressure of the water above him will prevent the log from plunging on him. Down, 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 down comes the log and hits the water with a splash. Last picture, old Cosmo looks at the river below and, seeing no sign of Roy, says to his mule,
"Hey, let's go, Fern. That Sneed will be glad to know I got rid of that timber detective Rogers." Hey, I wonder why Itch also hates the same logging camp which hires him as timber cruiser.
That log did hit Roy after all?
Well, if he were far enough at the bottom, the force of the log from the top could be broken by the water that's above Roy.
But we don't see Roy come up. I hope he wasn't knocked subconscious.
Well, I'm afraid we'll have to wait until next week to find that out.
Wait, wait, wait. Always wait, wait, wait.
Well, that's life, I guess.
Life, life, life.
Now, don't be too unhappy. After all, next week does come around.
Yes. And I know I will be here.
Well, that's fine. And I will be, too. So let us turn over the page.
Here's Flash Gordon.
Fine. And Flash is beginning a new expedition, remember?
Yes. When he got back to Earth, he found it completely covered with snow and ice. And a man named Icy Stark is going to find out what the reason was for this. And Flash is going along.
Yes, but Stark didn't want Flash to go with him. But he has to take him. And Flash has an idea that some enemies of the Earth have stopped the sun's rays from reaching the Earth.
And when the sun doesn't shine on the Earth, it becomes cold and icy like in the winter.
Yes, and that's exactly what Flash thinks.
But Icy doesn't believe that Flash is right, though.
Well, let's read now and find out who is right. Riga, riga, doon, doon, saskamatash. Let's have music for Heroic Flash. Icy Stark's expedition flies into the Arctic to track down the mysterious force that is cooling the sun's rays. The northern lights build up a furious electronic storm. The rocket lurches wildly in the turbulent air, but Flash and Stark manage to keep their ship under control as they search for a landing. Suddenly, a clear patch of ice looms below, and the giant ship is set down safely. Stark orders,
"All hands outside to make tests."
But Flash finds that he is left standing idly by with no task assigned to him. As Stark and the others go off to investigate, last picture top row, realizing that Stark still resents his presence, Flash decides to reconnoiter on his own. He and Dale have hardly left the main party when they sense a threat. Flash whispers,
"I'm sure we're being watched, Dale. Wait here."
First picture bottom row, Flash moves along, strolling forward with feigned casualness. Then suddenly he whirls. Behind him loom two giant figures, men from another world. Swiftly, the two strangers reach for their weapons. A shower of fiery sparks grazes Flash as he whips his own neutron gun into action. And the two giants topple to the ice. But they're only stunned by the rays which would have killed an Earthman. Last picture, the ray blast bring help on the run. From a distance, Stark fears that Flash has clashed with Eskimo natives who might have helped the expedition. But as he starts to berate Flash, he spots a strange symbol on the chest of one of the giants. Flash says grimly, "I believe your Eskimos came from the planet Saturn." Yes, it is. A great big planet far away in the sky. And these mysterious men come from there. Gracious, you're smart to know this.
Yes, I am, aren't I?
You bet you are. Now maybe Stark will realize when he sees that Flash is right about this Eskimo coming, this giant. Maybe he'll realize that Flash is smarter than he thinks he is.
But I almost wish that Flash wasn't, because if Flash is right, well, then it means more trouble for them. And these men are giants, and here Flash and the others are in a strange land.
Yes, it could mean lots of trouble for Flash. Well, we'll find this out next week. Now, that's all the time I have. But before I go, here's that nice fellow with some more interesting information. Well, honey, and all you boys and girls, I gotta go now.
All right, Mr. Comic Vision Man, but I'll be waiting for you next week.
Okay, that's a date, and a date with all you boys and girls. Be sure to meet me with our little friend Miss Honey next week when I read Puck the Comic Weekly. For I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. I'll be back to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Don't forget, boys and girls, see you all next week. Your friend, the Comic Weekly Man. The Jolly Comic Weekly Man.